Hi, it's Tracy. Before we start, I have a request. Okay, it's a little weird, maybe even a lot weird, but hello, 6.5 million downloads on my podcast, and still we haven't chosen a sponsor, right? Yeah, they just haven't been good enough for us, and that's a little weird too. So I decided I'm going to treat this like a sponsorship spot. Many of you know Marcus, my son, who's been the inspiration behind this podcast, the book, my programs, anything at all to do with ADHD. Well, he is graduating from NYU this May, and boy, are we happy that he did it in 4 years. So anyway, Marcus loves to travel, and so he's spending 6 weeks by himself traveling to 5 countries in South America. I don't know about you, but there's no way in hell that I would go to even one country alone. And so we gave Marcus a very low budget. This trip is a combination of his birthday and graduation gift, and he figured it all out himself. He speaks some Spanish, but he hired a Spanish tutor from Ecuador a couple weeks ago, months maybe, who's a professor at a university there, and this professor is helping him with his conversational Spanish. Marcus also changed his phone to Spanish only and all of his apps, and he only watches Spanish TV in preparation for this trip. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what Marcus is like. Now, Marcus would ultimately like to earn a PhD in psychology. He's fascinated by the brain, learning differences, and particularly how dyslexia impacts math. For the near future, though, he wants to work for a couple of years in New York City. I never thought he'd say that. He was always looking for more nature. So anyway, he's going on this trip, and what he's trying to do is find a job that he can come back to. He's come very close, but still no cigar. So yes, I am hawking my son's skills on these airwaves. He thinks I'm insane. But I'm like, who knows what interesting people are out there? I mean, I found my husband in a personal ad when no one was doing that. So why not find a job using my podcast? I mean, ultimately, finding a partner or finding a job, it's all the same thing, right? It's marketing, just getting the word out. Right job, right person. So that's my weird request. If you have any leads in New York City, Marcus would love to work in advertising or marketing sales. He's a phenomenal researcher. I promise you, he can find anything. He's very skilled in Excel and financial modeling. He'd be amazing in digital advertising or tech marketing. And beyond his hard skills, he's resilient. He's so smart. And he has an exceptional work ethic. And that's not just his mother talking. He's not like me. He prefers not to challenge the status quo all the time. He actually likes structure and systems. And he has so many ideas about how to make things better, faster, more efficient, simpler. So I'm putting this out there to our incredible community. If you know of any opportunities in digital advertising, tech marketing, or sales that are in New York City and could benefit from a bright, hardworking, and respectful young professional like my son Marcus, send me an email at support@tracyoutsuka.com and I will connect the two of you. Look, Marcus represents the very essence of what we talk about here every week, right? The brilliance of thinking differently. And so does his mother. So thank you for letting me be weird. And now let's get on with the show.
ADHD is kind of like the sriracha. Like if you had a whole plate full of sriracha, it's just going to be too much. But if you're missing the sriracha, there's like something missing. Like you need to have a little bit of everything for it to be complete.
Richard Branson, Michael Phelps, Justin Timberlake, James Carville. Wait a minute. Where are the women? Greta Gerwig, Lisa Ling, Audra McDonald, Simone Biles. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of industries. They all have ADHD, but you don't hear much about that now, do you? You know what else you don't hear about? Are the 43% of people with ADHD who are in excellent mental health. Why aren't we talking about them and what they're doing right? I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka, and that's exactly what we do here. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, and now the author of my new book, ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. I'm also a certified ADHD coach and the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a patented system that helps ADHD women just like you get unstuck and fall in love with their brilliant brains. Here, we embrace our too muchness and we focus on our strengths. My guests and I credit our ADHD for some of our greatest gifts. And to those who still think they're too much, too impulsive, too scattered, too disorganized, I say, no one ever made a difference by being too little. I hope I didn't, like, literally, I'm sure I did, because that's probably on the video, right, that I'm coughing. Anyway, hello. I am your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for episode number 252. I hope that you'll pre-order my new book. It's named after this podcast, ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. And you can find it at ADHDforSmartWomen.com/book. I guess the browsers, they don't like the word ass. So you get blocked if that's in your URL. So it is ADHDforSmartWomen.com. My purpose, as you know, is always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. And in the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something. Not one. And so, of course, I am just delighted to introduce you to Lisa Lewis. Lisa Lewis is an HR professional with over 12 years of comprehensive human resources and management experience. She's passionate about learning development, creating systematic processes to build a high-performance workforce and team culture development. Lisa values empathy, dignity, and respect in the workplace with a clear focus on diversity, equality, and inclusion. Lisa received a late diagnosis of ADHD and now attributes her diverse background and success to her neurodiversity. Originally from Toronto, Ontario. Why am I having such problems with your bio? I don't know. Ontario. She's moved back and forth across Canada, lived for a few years in the United Kingdom, and she's had the opportunity to work and travel to over 40 countries. Lisa is a mother of two neurodiverse teen girls, has an addiction to TED Talks, collects cats, but not on purpose. I love that one. And loves trail running for health and sanity with her two husky Malamute crosses. Lisa, welcome. Did I get all of that right? Even though I sputtered all over it.
You did. Thank you so much.
Wonderful. So before we talk about what it is that you do, I would love to know about your background, specifically your ADHD diagnoses. Can you give us a story? What happened? How did it come about?
Sure. So I've been working in the field of neurodiversity for about 25 years. I kind of fell into it. So I was about 25 years ago, I was trained in applied behavior analysis, and I was working for the regional program back in Toronto. And then when I moved over across Canada to Vancouver Island, I was working for the regional program here. And so most of the kids that we were working with had an autism diagnosis or a co-occurring diagnosis of ADHD, learning disabilities, multiple other things. And I've been working with these kids for ages, and probably about 8 or 9 years ago, my boss at the time said, we were talking late at night, and she said, you know, you have adult ADHD. And I was like, shut up. What are you talking about? And she was like, yeah, you do. And so when we hung up, I Googled traits of ADHD, and I think 12 came up and I had 11. So I was like, well, maybe she's got something here. And so I went to have an official diagnosis. So I went to show up at the medical center to meet the psychiatrist, and a friend of mine who I don't even really know was working there. And she was like, hey, like, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, apparently I might have ADHD. And she's like, yeah, thing. All these people have known me for years and no one said anything beforehand. And I've been working with, you know, so many kids and people who had ADHD, but couldn't see the traits in myself. So I went in and I was talking to the psychiatrist, and he looked very psychiatrist-y. He had, you know, the elbow pads and, you know, the little tiny glasses. And he's very, very serious and studious. And we sit down, he starts asking me questions. And then I was getting irritated because he was talking too slow. And I was just like, wait. I'm like, why don't I just tell you why I think I'm here? And he's like, all right. And so I yammered off about this and this and this and this. And then he's like, can I finish? And I was like, sure. So, you know, I think we talked for about an hour and a half. And then he was like, so it sounds like you have a couple questions about ADHD. And I said, well, yeah, you know, like this is something that, you know, I thought I wasn't smart when I was a kid. It wouldn't explain so much. Like, this is why I'm here. And he said, well, you know, in the diagnostic, when you're diagnosing someone with ADHD, there's a lot of gray, you know, it could have, you know, a lot of different childhood trauma and different things could, you know, be portrayed as ADHD. He's like, but you're like the most ADHD person I have ever met. Usually I first recommend mindfulness, but we're going straight to medication, and signed it off. And it was just kind of funny the way I was just like, took over the assessment. And then when I decided to take a mindfulness course, and it was almost like putting Tabasco in my eyes. It was like so slow. And they're saying, okay, well, you know, we'll look at the purse in front of you. Is it soft? Is it, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, come on. Just give me the tools so I can get out of here. I got other things to do. But yeah, a lot of things have changed since then.
So I'm curious, what was Lisa like as a child?
It would surprise many people who know me now. But I was extremely shy. I was very quiet, well, especially at school. The friends that I had, I was like the sheep. I was the follower. The friends that were very bossy, they were like, hey, you know, I remember this one girl, she had these long braids. I don't even remember what her name was. And she was like, hey, come on, hold my racket. We're going to go over there. I'm going to beat up those boys over there. Grab my bag. And I was like, all right, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. Half the time I would, you know, if I was at home, I would go call on the neighbor's dogs instead of people. To go hang out with. I was just very quiet and shy and reserved. And then when I hit high school, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden I just started talking, and I haven't stopped talking since.
Well, it's interesting because we know dopamine modulates estrogen. And I believe that where most ADHD shows up for women is in puberty. So it makes sense.
That would make total sense. When I was younger, I always felt awkward, I just felt like I didn't fit in or didn't belong. When I got into high school, I got some confidence. Mm-hmm. I kind of like fit in with a bunch of different groups. I would like flit around. I was very athletic. So I hung out with the athletic people, and, you know, there was the goth kids, and I would like to hang out with them. And I had some cool, you know, relationships there. And, you know, I would just kind of flit around, but I was like the goofy one. I was the clown, and I just kind of jumped around. And, you know, in some social settings, I was on fire, and I was just like, you know, I own the group. And in other times, I was just like a gangly, awkward teenager. It just didn't seem to.
It's interesting, your story, though, because what I typically hear is women who have ADHD, and when they were younger, they were really confident, and then they got into their teen years and the confidence just plummeted. Versus with you, it almost sounds like it was a little bit opposite.
It was definitely opposite, but I also, again, after listening to quite a few women in your podcast, I knew there was something different. I knew there was something wrong, and I couldn't figure it out. With academics, it was hard, but not consistently hard. I was pretty much an AB student, but I had to work hard at it. Mm. Some subjects I flew through, others, you know, especially, I didn't like math, and my parents wanted to make sure that I, you know, had a good academic standing. So they always wanted me to take the advanced math. So I would go before and after school to tutor and to make sure that I was in there. Mm-hmm. And I would do well on projects, tests and exams. I didn't, I had no memory, and things would just, when I would try to study or things like this, I remember just seeing black, and I was like, why is my mind, like, I literally saw black. Like, I don't understand. I couldn't figure out why I was different and why I couldn't think. And it didn't help that my best friend at the time always got like 110%. She got all the bonus questions. She applied to Harvard. And my mom was always like, you know, why can't you be more like Lori? Why can't you do this? And I couldn't figure out what was different between her and I. And it was just, I just figured that I wasn't very smart.
Because when you talked to her, when you interacted with her, you felt like you guys were basically the same person.
Yeah. And I couldn't figure out why, you know, during certain classes, it just all came to me. And I understood it. I got it and I excelled. And then in other classes, I just couldn't get it. It didn't matter how many times I repeat or I would read something. And by the time I got to the bottom of the page, I'd forgotten what I had read. Like it just didn't sink in. And I was like, how can I make this happen? How can I make this work?
It's me again, Tracy. You know how people often assume that if you have ADHD, you're just lazy, unmotivated, and not living up to your full potential? Well, I'm here to tell you they've got it all wrong, except for the part about not reaching your full potential. But that's only because you haven't found the right strategies tailored for your unique ADHD brain. And that's exactly why I wrote ADHD for Smartass Women. This book, it's designed to help you understand the different approaches that work for your distinct brain, inspiring you to become the best version of yourself right now. You can grab a copy wherever books are sold. And if you've already read my book, please take a moment to leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads. Your feedback, it not only supports me and my publisher, but it also helps other smart-ass women and their kids, friends, and colleagues find the strategies they need to thrive. Every review makes a huge difference. So go write a review now or buy the book now before you forget. Okay, back to our usual programming. So I remember in your letter to me, you sent me an email and you wrote that you just didn't think you were smart enough to go to college, so you didn't go to college. Yet you were an AB student. So how are you an AB student, yet you still don't think you're smart enough to go to college?
I was completely insecure, and I knew that there was something different, and I knew that I was having these difficulties in studying, and I didn't want to be embarrassed by not getting in. So I was just like, I'm not going to put myself out there. I was always good at
helplessness.
Yeah, I just figured in my head, people who went to university were all brilliant, and I was not that. And so I didn't even look at it. So I was always good at art, and so I decided to take graphic design, not because it was something that I was dying to do, but it was just something that was in the art field that I knew that I could make money at. And so I got enrolled in the local college and went to do that.
When you said that you were just so inconsistent, you know, you would do really well in one class and then you wouldn't do well in another class. Do you now know what the difference was?
It was interest, 100%. If it was something that I was interested in, and I would just click and I would get it. But if it wasn't something that I was interested in, and math was not something I was interested in, it just didn't happen. Like even now, like trying to play crib, I can't do math in my head. Don't even ask me. I'm not going to play crib. I'm not going to play cards. It gives me so much anxiety and it's ridiculous because it's like basically counting to 20. Like I can't. Just don't ask me.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you would continue your story that I so rudely interrupted. So you graduate from high school. You enroll in this graphic design. Was that a program or?
Yeah, it was a 2-year program. I enjoyed it. I was doing really well. But then I kind of pulled a Lisa where, you know, it was like a month or two before I was to graduate. One of my good friends, she was moving to Scotland. That's where she had dual citizenship and she was going to train to be a midwife. And she was like, Lisa, you should come to Scotland. And I was like, I had all these different excuses. I had never been on a plane. I had never been anywhere. And I was like, oh, it's really important. I have to stay here and blah, blah, blah. And she said,
plus you have to graduate, right?
Yeah. And she said to me, Lisa, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And I was like, it just clicked. I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to go. It's much more important to go find myself than to finish these last 2 months of school after, you know, spending.
What did your parents say?
They weren't happy, but they have always been very supportive of me and they knew that I was going to do what I was going to do. They always called me the fruitcake growing up. I was always the
the flaky one who was always like, there's, of course you did, Lisa. Of course you did. You know, I was always all over the place. And so I meant to go to the UK for, you know, maybe a month or two, ended up staying probably about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where at the time I thought that it was, you know, me being flaky and flighty and not being consistent. And then looking back at, I love talking to people and being impulsive, how kind of my life played out. So like I go to Scotland and then I was working at a photography gallery and I was working at a cafe and I started talking to people and when the chef was like, I'm going to move up to the Highlands, and I got a job at a resort there. And I was like, well, that sounds awesome. Let's do that. And so I just like followed her along up to the Highlands of Scotland to, Ullapool. So I had like, you know, 5 pubs, no grocery store. The next town was 1.5 hours away, and it was like totally remote and beautiful and amazing. And I remember Leonard Cohen had a house there. I remember sitting in Leonard Cohen's house. He wasn't there, but I was just like, I can't even believe I'm here. And then I met this Aussie couple, and they were like, you know what? We've got friends, our friend who's, you know, in the Tour de France. We're going to go follow him around. We're going to follow the Tour de France. And I was like, well, that sounds like an awesome idea. So I quit my job, and with this couple, just the 3 of us, we get into their VW van and we spend the summer following the Tour de France. We get down to Spain. They're like, you know, let's go to the Running of the Bulls. Let's go to the Running of the Bulls. And, you know, while I was there, we ended up staying at a campground that was full of Hell's Angels, and they made these garbage pails full of sangria. And we just hung out with these Hell's Angels and went to the Running of the Bulls, not a bullfight. And it was so much fun.
Did you actually do the Running of the Bulls? Were you one of the people running?
We watched the run, but the wildest thing happened. So we watched the run. And so every day for 7 days, they have the running and then they have the bullfight at night. I didn't want to see a bullfight.
Yeah.
But the coolest thing happens. So like when you go to the Running of the Bulls, they run through the town and then they go into this large arena and there's tons of people all wearing white and red in the arena, and the bulls come in and then they run through and then they go through back into the back area. And then they let out 2 bulls at a time. And I don't understand the whole background of it, but every once it's the bulls getting their revenge. So all these people would sit down in front of the doors and the bulls would run over them. And then they would kind of run around and then people would kind of like chase the bulls with newspapers and hit them. And then the bulls would like lie down. But the coolest thing happened, they would let out 2 dairy cows and the dairy cows would come out, and I don't know how they knew where the bull was on their own, sandwich the bull and walk him back in. And then they would do this again. It was kind of wild to see how the animals just knew how to do this. But yeah. And so then I realized I had no money. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, I've got to do something. And they were going to follow on. So they ended up dropping me off in Toulouse. And I had enough for a flight to Wales, where a friend of mine lived. But it wasn't until the next day. And I had a tin of beans. And I think I had like maybe 2 or 3 euro. And I didn't even have a can opener. And the flight wasn't until the next day. And I just figured I would just hang out at the airport until then. And then they were like, you know, 11 o'clock, I didn't realize everyone was gone. They're like, you have to leave. And it's in the middle of nowhere in the south of France. And I was like, I have nowhere to go. No l'argent, nothing. And they were like, too bad, out. So of course, it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. And I call my mother and say, I'm in the south of France and I've got no money. And I'm in the dark and who knows. And so just to give her a complete heart attack, and then went to go sleep on a park bench. And then these men came out and they said, you have to leave. And I said, I had no money. And they checked through on my bag and I just kind of sat there. And trying to talk to them, and they were like, come on in. And where the bags go around, that's where I slept. And they gave me juice and muffins. And when I woke up in the morning, because it's such a small airport, they were like, oh, you're the girl who slept on the luggage rounds. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, well, your flight was at 7 at night and now you're here at 7 in the morning and you can, you know, hang out with the pilots. And I was like, amazing. So then I went to Wales and I started bartending there, and I was a terrible, terrible bartender. But it was okay, because it was a super busy, like a nightclub pub. People would come up and they would say, you know, I want a pint of this. And I would say, here you go. And they're like, that's not it. And I'm like, you're fine. Here you go.
someone else. They would just got whatever they got.
So that was the perfect place for you to pub, right? Or you to bartend.
And then, you know, I met people there and then we went through Ireland and France. And then, you know, I came back home. It was just...
You forgot about the selling firecrackers out of the back of a moving truck?
Oh, well, and this is the thing is like people would always just say like, Lisa, you just talk to anyone. And it's not just me. It's my mom's side of the family. She has four sisters and all of us are the exact same. We just talk to anybody. And so, you know, I would go just... Someone would mention something about, you know, this. And I was like, hey, I'll do that. And it was like, I had all these different jobs, but it was like for here, just picking them up here and there. So like, yeah, would sell firecrackers out of the back of the moving truck for me long weekend or whatever else, or selling flowers on the side of the highway. I remember going into a hair salon when I was like 15 and I kind of like walked through and there was a really cute hairdresser working there. And I was just like, well, looks like you need some help here. There's some dust around here. You should hire me on. And so, you know, I worked there for a little while. I worked at a mortgage office. Like I kind of just, and almost didn't even look for jobs. I would just start talking to people and things would pop up. And so I'd be like, sure, I'll do that. Why not? I'll, you know, sell bingo cards. I'll, you know, I'll bartend. I'll do whatever you want.
Were your parents worried?
Well, yes. It was always just like, I was the flaky one. I was the one like with the head of my clouds and just kind of like, you know.
So how many kids are in your family?
There's myself and my sister.
And was your sister completely different than you?
The opposite of me in every single way. She's okay. Blonde and she's quiet and she's very straightforward. She's the best person in the world. I always tell her, I like you and nobody else. Completely hilarious. And she's just, yeah, she's amazing.
But she was really studious, didn't have problems with school, just kind of skated through.
No, yeah, well, yeah, she had her few bumps in high school. She's just very, she's straight. She doesn't have the impulsivity. She doesn't have, it's like an opposite personality type. Now, my mother is different where we're almost like, I don't know if we're oil and water or oil and oil, where we're always clashing and I can't tell if it's like because we're exactly the same. Or different. And when I told her I had ADHD, she's like, oh, Lisa, come on. You're always just like putting these things up. And then after, you know, she...
Well, and that feels good, right?
Right. Well, and then, you know, her sisters were all like, you know what? Like, you do too.
Meaning your mom does.
Yes. Ah. And so now that she has ADHD, XYZ, she has all the letters. She's got all the things.
Wait a minute. So now your mom says she has ADHD or is she talking about you?
Her, that she does.
Oh.
That she totally. And
so she dismissed it in you, but now she's like, I've got it. But does she now agree that you have it too?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, the not knowing. She didn't understand what it was. And it was just like, oh, you're off on another tangent on something else, you know? But look, like she is an amazing woman. Like when I was born, she was a Swiss Chalet waitress and she worked her way, you know, from there. And then she got a job as a bank teller and then, you know, to the manager of the bank. And then she became one of the top mortgage brokers in Canada.
Ah.
And she doesn't have post-secondary education, but because she's a talker, you know what I mean? Everybody loved her. And I remember she would work like a dog. She would come home from work and she would sit down to eat and she had to take like 20 minutes to like just catch her breath. To like unwind.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone needed help or someone needed anything, she was there. Everyone called her the angel. And she's funny as hell. My family's all from Newfoundland and they're all hilarious. But yeah, we very much love each other and get along or we fight even when we're agreeing about the same thing. I'll be like, I'm agreeing with you. And she's like, oh my gosh.
Well, it sounds like it probably is because you are so alike. She knows exactly who you are. She can feel it. And so when she sees you making what she thinks, you know, maybe she made that mistake before, right? She can see it. Even if it turns out right, she's worried because it's not what she would decide to do.
Exactly. And I think that's the emotional regulation piece as well, where it's like, you know, when we're happy, we're super happy. And when we're upset, we're like, it's just like heartbreaking. And so when she gets worried, it stresses her out so much. And she just like, it almost gets like an anger. You know what I mean? Because you just want to make sure everything's going to be okay. And it's funny because I recognize a lot of my mother's traits when I'm with my own girls.
Ah.
Or when they get hurt, I'm almost like, I almost get upset. Like, oh, I can't get hurt because it's just like, it almost like takes pieces out of you.
Yeah. Yeah. So Lisa, the fruitcake, found an area 20 years ago that she fell in love with. And so she's not a fruitcake anymore. Right?
No, it's I felt like I've come into my own and, you know, getting the diagnoses really helped me understand who I was before and who I am now. And it, things make sense. And I think when you get a diagnosis and you start learning about how your own brain works and what works for you and you're learning all these different strategies and you realize that you had already created these strategies in the past without realizing that that's what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And I make more sense to me now than I did before, where before I just felt like I was lost. I felt broken and just like, why can't I do anything right? And then I realized I did everything that I was meant to do to get to the place where I'm at now.
Yeah. And I'm sure all of those jobs, every single one of them, there was a little piece that you figured out one more thing about yourself.
Oh, 100%. And then everything that you, everywhere that you go and everyone that you meet and all the education that you do, it all builds together and relates to each other somehow and can help you out as you go on. I think this is why I have my addiction to TED Talks. My husband, he's always like, Lisa, it's not normal to do like, you know, like 10 workshops in a week or I love the learning. I love listening and TED Talks is the stories. You know what I mean? It's not just, you know, rote basic facts. It's like something with depth and it's an experience and I just find it so captivating.
So is there anything else that's changed since you were diagnosed?
Yes. And I feel like I was lucky because I was able to be on both sides of the fence as like at one point as a seemingly neurotypical. And then again, as like someone who is neurodiverse, where, you know, I went to school. I learned all about applied behavior analysis and, you know, this, which is like the science of human behavior. And I was working with, you know, all these kids who had an autism diagnosis. And I remember one particular time I was working with this little guy. He was adorable. And we were working on emotional regulation. And he kept saying to me, I think he was 5. And he said, Lisa, this isn't working. And I said, well, you know, the book says that works. And, you know, all we have to do is we have to try a little bit harder and practice a little bit more. And you're going to get it because, you know, I read all the books and I'm the adult and this is what we have to do. And then I was diagnosed and I tried these same strategies on myself. And I was like, wow, I should have listened to that 5-year-old when he said that strategy was not working for him.
Yeah.
And you need to listen to the individual and follow and work together to figure out what strategies are going to work and how it's going to be. And I think before where I had all this rote learning and, you know, I was very grateful for having the opportunity to learn so much about all these different neurodiversities, the science and the basic information around it. But I also at the same time have met hundreds of people who are neurodiverse because as we know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And so I worked with so many kids, but then their families would come in and they're like, you know, I'm not diagnosed, you know, with autism, but, you know, I can read a book in a weekend. And, you know, I'm a chemical engineer and I travel all around the world and I don't like anyone sitting on the left side of my couch. She's like, I get it.
They're all different though, right? It's kind of like ADHD. You meet one person with ADHD, you've met one person with ADHD. We are all so different.
Well, that's exactly the more that I learn about ADHD and neurodiversity, the more that I know I don't know because it is so vast. And like I've worked and been friends with and been around so many people and I've never met two alike and never have two
people were, it gets so you don't even see any differences because it's just the person. Like both of my girls have ADHD and all three of us present completely differently. And we're from the same gene pool. You know what I mean?
In what way? Can you explain?
Well, Priya, she's more like me. She's constantly thinking, going, you know, both of us have never been on time, not super late, but, you know, always a little bit late, a little bit more impulsive. Where Callie, I don't think she's got the H. She's got the hyperactivity. She was always like, we'd be eating dinner and all of a sudden she starts scaling the walls and she's up top here moving and she's got like more confidence than you've ever seen anyone. She's just like a firecracker. She's hilarious. And it's just, but she's on time and she gets all of her projects done on time. Where Priya and I, it's the very last minute. It just waits till like, you know, just skimming the edge of the line.
Yeah.
But it's cool. You know what I mean? Because we are different. And, you know, like if you go to the DSM and you have your diagnostic criteria. So like, you know, for let's say for autism, you have to hit so many traits in these three different domains. But let's say you have some, but not all. You still have those difficulties. You know what I mean? You may still have a hard time with social communication or whatever else, but you don't have all of the traits. So now you're neurotypical because you didn't hit a few.
Yeah.
It's everybody has things that they have a hard time with and whatever else. And, you know, our ADHD makes it difficult, but also amazing. And so you just have to like work with the individual to find out what works and what doesn't and support person for who they are. It doesn't really matter the criteria.
I had a guest come on, Andinette Wilkinson. She's ADHD and has autism. And she explained it so, like I'd never heard it explained in that way. And I thought it was brilliant. She said, I feel like it's a constellation, right? In the sky. And however many stars come into, those are symptoms, right? Or traits. However many stars are more in one area versus another, that's the label that you get. But it's all different. And sometimes there's a bunch of labels, right? But it feels to me like it's all part of the same thing.
Well, completely. And like, I did feel broken. I did feel like I wasn't enough. I always felt lesser than. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired of it. I don't want to feel like that. And I just get so tired of hearing the us and them. You know what I mean? Like someone with, you know, ADHD, they're always late or they're always disorganized. And I'm like, really? Have you met everyone? Like mm-hmm. I am like ridiculously organized. Like I cannot answer an email if there's dishes in the sink.
Yeah.
But my friends are the opposite. So how can you say that everyone has all of these traits?
Yeah.
Or, sorry, I forgot what I was going to say. I remember when I was diagnosed and I was working at a clinic and one of the analysts who also had ADHD, she said, you know what, to learn a little bit more about this, why don't you read Dr. Russell Barkley's Taking Control of Your Adult ADHD?
Yeah.
And so I started reading it and I picked it up and put it down three times because I was so completely overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
Where when I had my, you know, when I looked it up and there was those 12 kind of, you know, basic traits around ADHD.
Yeah.
That was okay because they were very basic. But when he starts discussing all the different traits, I think there was like 44 different traits, but they were so specific. And it was like, you know, has a hard time with budgeting and drives.
And so negative.
Right. But it's also like, are you in my house? Like, how do you know I drive fast?
Yeah.
And it was like, where does ADHD end and I begin? Like it was just too much. Like, 'cause there are like thousands of Lisas running around who are exactly the same as me and I didn't get it. And now I get it. There's no us in them, but it's like getting it out there to have people to understand because the stereotypes and biases just come straight up.
Absolutely.
There was this one time I went to it was after I got diagnosed. I was invited to go to a bachelorette party. And we went, and it was at a winery, a local winery, and I didn't know any of the women there. I only knew the bride. And it was very fancy, and we're all standing. It was a luncheon, and it was lovely, and everyone's wearing flower dresses, and all the women are talking. And they said, oh, did you hear about Susan? And they're, you know, the one with ADHD. You know, he got married. They're like, oh, well, that's so good. Good for him. Sue Sung got married, the one with ADHD. And I wanted to say, like, you know what? I have ADHD and I drove here all by myself. It's just it's, you know, everyone can't be exposed. You only know what you know. And so you end up, that's where you get stuck on your biases of what you see in movies or what you've heard.
Yeah.
And you get stuck there because you haven't had the opportunity to experience people and to just listen and know more. It's almost like when you hear the word diagnosis, people get scared that, you know, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
But it's not wrong.
No, not at all. I want to ask you about applied behavior analysis, because I have you here. And I'm sure you know how the autism community feels about ABA. I would love your take on it, because I know this is what you did for how many years?
Wow. It was like, probably, I definitely have time blindness. I cannot tell you a year for anything. I was probably an interventionist for probably about 12 or 13 years. And then I went into, then I became a manager of a service provider and then into HR for another service provider. A long time. So
yeah.
When I first got into the field, and again, it was very much, you know, someone said, hey, they're hiring to, you know, work with autism. And I was like, what's autism? I'd never even heard of. I had, you know, no background or experience with it. And I got hired on in the regional program, and they had a very intensive training in applied behavior analysis, which is the science of human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very strict. You had to speak monotone. And it was, when I first started, it was awful. I remember this poor little kiddo. He was lovely. And he was the sweetest kiddo. He had very limited language at this point. And he had three programs, and it was like, come sit, look at me, and respond to name. And I was with him 8 hours a day. And that's all. And I was just like, buddy, you want, let's go jump in the pool. Let's go for a swim. Let's go. And yeah. I was constantly, because it didn't feel right.
Mm-mm.
And then when I moved, that was in Toronto. And then when I moved over to Vancouver Island and I started working there, it was much more naturalistic. We had, made like a mock kindergarten program. And so all the different kids were working on like writing their name or whatever else. But we did it in an inclusive setting, so they didn't realize that they were kind of like working on these specific things. They would mm-hmm. go off to their own, with their own interventions to work with things, but still kind of very strict. And what used to happen, and I don't know if it still happens now, is where, you know, what I appreciate about applied behavior analysis is I appreciate learning about the different diagnoses, the different traits, but also about the learning process, about how to break down a task, let's say you're learning how to tie your shoes into a much smaller step. And, you know, just to do that with, you know, shorter periods of time and repetition and positive reinforcement. What I don't agree with and I think has also been constantly evolving and is not happening as much as it used to, is, let's say if you were flapping your hands because you were excited to self-regulate, or if you were upset, where they would change it to like a quiet hands and try to make it something more socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If you be you, I like the learning component, but not the changing of who you are. It has to be multidisciplinary. You know what I mean? Like let's say, you know, someone's upset because they don't want to sleep because they're scared at night. And if you look at just at the science, so you could be like, okay, so they're in their bed, they are safe, they are fine, that nothing's going to hurt them. But what about leaving them in the trauma around? Like, what if they have trauma? What if they have other things? Like, everyone's so multifaceted, you have to kind of consider everything, right? Yeah. And so it's, again, working with the person and being completely person-centered. Like, you know, by the time I had finished it, we would talk to the kiddos and then, or especially more so with the youth, and be like, what do you want to learn? Like, what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so they had, like, it's all about being person-centered and them leading what they want to work on it and learn more about.
Which makes so much sense, right? Because of interest.
Yes, exactly. So definitely there was the benefits and things that you know didn't feel right with me at the same time too. And it's, you know, it's a huge conversation in our community as well. But then also too, like at the same time where, you know, the last clinic space I worked at, most of the clinicians had some type of neurodiversity, you know, some autism, some had ADHD or some other co-occurring things. And so it was just commonplace to talk about it. Like there was no hiding it. There was no shame around it. It was just like, oh, I'm having a really hard time with focus. And so like, okay, well, why don't you just like work on your focus time, figure out what your focus time is and, you know, take a break after, you know, 15, 20 minutes. Or it was, everyone had flexible work schedules. It was just, you know, whatever whatever works for you, as long as you get your hours in, work with them. If it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you do you. And, or people be like talking out loud because that's how they processed, you know, when they were reading through, you know, their different articles or whatever, they would talk out loud and it was commonplace. And people would always come up to me and say, I think it's weird that you talk like you have no shame around your diagnoses. And I was like, well, I was never in a culture where there was shame. And so I find it so, which is even why I'm even more passionate about it now where.
But there kind of was, Lisa. I mean, if you know, you were called the fruitcake, right?
Yes. So there was a ton of shame, but I didn't know I had ADHD then. I just thought I was weird and different and not smart. By the time I was diagnosed, I was in that realm when I understood what ADHD was.
Yeah.
But I was surrounded by neurodiverse people who had no shame around it.
Got it.
You know what I mean? They were frustrated about, you know, oh, why is my memory so horrible?
So you weren't embarrassed at all about the diagnoses. It was a relief that, oh my gosh, I finally know what explained these behaviors.
Yes and no. It was like, it was a huge relief. It like explained so many things and I was always free to talk about it, but I always wished I always struggled with like, why can I not remember things? And like, why can I, you know, why is processing this taking me so long? Or why can't I just be on time? And so I struggled with that. And, you know, the one thing that does embarrass me all the time is my over-talking. And I would like when we would be driving to parties or social situations where I wasn't too sure, I remember talking to myself and say, Lisa, just don't talk, because you're going to embarrass yourself and talk over people. I remember it was a huge difference when I went to medication and I went, I started taking Adderall and all of a sudden it was like, there was a huge difference.
Mm.
But I was waiting for this like magic pill to help with some things and not with other things.
Yeah.
And so I'm a huge researcher. So I was like, I am going to research and find the best medication, you know, for this. And again, like all I was finding was just what they were and their side effects. It didn't tell me what was better. It didn't tell me, you know, what it helped with. And then I soon learned that, you know, all the medications are completely different in it. It's how they react to you.
Yeah.
And so I tried Vyvanse for a while. I tried 3 times, but the crash at the end of the day made me so depressed. I was just like, why am I trying to fix something that's not broken? Adderall actually does work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was talking to a psychiatrist and I was like, I'm really embarrassed about my over-talking. So why don't you try this drug called guanfacine? It's supposed to be like an impulse inhibitor. And I was telling one of the women that I worked with, one of the analysts, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to start taking this guanfacine so that, you know, I stop talking. And she was like, Lisa, I love you the way you are. Why would you want to change? And it shocked me at first because I was like, sister, I'm doing this for you. I'm helping you out. You get a break.
Yeah.
And it was just so moving to me that who I was okay. And everyone thought it was okay. It was my assumption that I was too much to other people.
Yeah. You just need to get around different people then, right?
Well, exactly.
My book, ADHD for Smartass Women with HarperCollins William Morrow, is now available for pre-order, and I need your help. I wrote this book to change the conversation around ADHD because I was certain that it was wrong. And I knew that because every single time I met one of you, it confirmed again what I say on this podcast every episode. But I've never met an ADHD woman that wasn't truly brilliant.
at something, not one. Let's help as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so that they too may discover their amazing strengths. Let's help as many women as we possibly can fall in love with their ADHD brain. Pre-order my book at ADHDforsmartwomen.com/book. And when you do, you're going to get access to all kinds of bonuses, like two live workshops with me. One on what ADHD really looks like in women for November. Another on ADHD stress and sleep, specifically how to get better sleep. And these are strategies that work, and they're from a former denier of the importance of sleep, who has since been reformed. You can ask my husband about that. That one's in December. You'll also get our ADHD for Smartass Women appendix, where we've curated the best books, websites, directories, and tools for falling in love with your ADHD brain, all for the cost of a $28 book. I'm super excited to share some advanced praise for this book. From Publishers Weekly, Otsuka adapts her podcast of the same name into an accessible debut guide aimed at helping women to harness their neurodivergent traits to achieve their goals. Those new to their diagnoses will glean as much valuable insight from Otsuka's strategies as from her explanations of such matters as why emotional regulation is more difficult for neurodivergent women than neurotypical women. Delivered in lucid and unpretentious prose, this is a solid starting point for those just beginning to learn about ADHD and its effects on the brain. From Dr. Edward Hallowell, author of 22 books on ADHD. She was born to deliver a message. You will see it bursting out on every page. Thanks to her, the textbooks are being rewritten. From Catherine Ellison, Pulitzer Prize winner and author of Buzz, A Year of Paying Attention. Tracy Otsuka's sparkling smart-ass positivity pours over these pages, powerful enough to lift the lowest self-esteem. From Dr. Christine Lee, clinical psychologist and host of the Make Time for Success podcast, Otsuka is truly the caring and wise fairy godmother of women with ADHD. And her book, ADHD for Smartass Women, is the lifeline, roadmap, guidance, and inspiration you've been looking for. You can find ADHD for Smartass Women, the book, at ADHDforsmartwomen.com/book. Go order it right now before you forget. I know you. So women with ADHD might find it challenging to advocate for themselves in the workplace. Is there a way for them to effectively communicate their needs and challenges without fear of judgment or stigma?
This is my huge hyper-focus right now. This is what's my heart and my passion and everything else, because I'm so tired again of the shame and the not knowing. And if you listen to any of the social media, any of the job coaches, any of everything, everyone's just like, don't disclose, right? Don't disclose, hide who you are. Like, I've been told to, I'm horrible at interviews, to like dumb down my resume and just get a entry position and work my way up. Or, don't say that, you want to work a 30-hour work week, pretend that it's okay. And then after you hit your probationary period, get a note from your doctor that, like, at least you know how to do this. Come on, get a note from your doctor and say that, you have some kind of medical condition that or anxiety that you need to have a lower. But it doesn't make sense to me, and it kills me. And so this is why I've started this new, I've opened up my own business to kind of support this. And actually, I've been emailing with Dr. Megan Ann Neuf, who was on your show, because when she was on your show, I started listening to her, and it was like, I've always been trying to figure out how to describe our different traits with depth, but not as a deficit. And she does it. She's like, when I started listening to her other podcast, I think it's called Divergent Minds or Divergent Conversations. Mm-hmm.
it was like when, you know, they say, you know, someone who is autistic, they have a slow processing time. But she's like, well, you know, you have a slow processing time because you're taking in so much information. You're taking in more than a neurotypical brain. So you're processing more. So it's not a deficit. It's not that you're slow. It has nothing to do with your intellect. It's that you have got so much information coming in. It takes you longer.
It's actually better.
It's better. Exactly. And that's why I was messaging with her. I was like, okay, I need your help because I want, you know, if I am doing this, I want to make sure that what I have is correct. And so she said that she would, you know, help me with my definitions to be able to give them depth and give them understanding. Because I think when you go into the workplace, I want to be able to educate organizations how it actually feels to have neurodiversity while you're in the workplace. How, like, what these traits are, like, when it's not a deficit, it's who we are. And, you know, sometimes everyone will need an accommodation, neurotypical or not, or neurodiverse or not. And actually, I think it was like, there's some 80% of people who ask for accommodations in the workplace are actually neurotypical. Because we have so much shame around it, it is our very last resort before we're going to go admit that we need help. You know what I mean? There's so much shame for after being told, you know, you're lazy, you're disorganized, you're this or whatever, to go and actually ask. And so
my question though is, if you disclose, then won't everything be seen through this lens? Like, you know, you could have made a mistake that anybody would make, any neurotypical would make. It had nothing to do with your ADHD. But now your boss is going to see everything you do through that, oh, she's got ADHD lens.
Yes.
Or is it your argument that disclose it right up front? You are who you are. Don't be ashamed of it. And if this job isn't going to work out, then go find a job where they're going to appreciate how your brain works.
I would say both. In the way of, I wish it was the way that we could just go in and disclose and everyone's just going to understand there's not going to be any bias or intersection of anything, but we're not there yet. And so there's so many people out there who are supporting neurodiversity in the workplace, and especially the research coming out of the UK and Australia seem to be far and beyond everything that we're doing here, where if we can keep the education piece going, so that people understand exactly what it is to be neurodiverse, or that it's not this huge difference. It's just a mutation of a brain. It's not different. I mean, it's
a variation on normal, right? We're just kind of at the farther ends.
Yeah, and you know, normal is what is what's considered dominant. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's no. So what I'm hoping is yes, to be able to support people, but you know, it's. If you don't feel comfortable in that position to disclose, don't until you're ready and you feel comfortable. But the more of us who are out there, and you know that everybody who's out there is doing this because of what has happened to them in the workplace, and they don't want it to happen to anybody else. They want to make sure that, you know, everyone doesn't feel the hurt or the pain and the shame that they have felt in the past. And so if we can start with the education piece, educating people so that they understand, so that it becomes that it's okay to diagnose. I had a job interview recently that it was for like a mentoring, and it was for a local HR consulting company. And it was something that I was overqualified for, but I had the nerve and I disclosed that I had ADHD because for me, I need the interview questions prior. And but only for like scenario questions, I'm fine. Anything else, I'm fine. But if you ask me something to recall in my past, like tell me about a time that you showed leadership. Well, I was a manager for 15 years. I'm sure I had showed leadership at some point, but I can't pull it out of the air. I need to have a time to think beforehand.
Totally.
And so I even explained this, and I thought that, you know, during my request, I explained why I needed it and what, and my asset of my ADHD that we'd give to the company. But when I started asking I started the interview, the woman said, well, because you asked for your interview questions first, are you going to be able to think on the spot? Are you going to need a long time to process things, you know, when you're in the position? And in my head, I was like, well, I don't know what kind of HR situation that I'm going to have to, you know, be on fire and think of things right away. That's always bitten me in the ass. You know, I have learned that it's so important to go and find the whole story, talk to everybody and figure out a good situation right. with people that you're with and not to be reactionary. When you're reactionary,
yeah,
you get it all wrong and people get hurt. It's just not effective.
And so that's actually your asset, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not a weakness.
It's not a weakness. And actually, I was reading that ADHD is one of the people with ADHD tend to go towards jobs like HR because they are people-centered businesses. It's problem solving. It's like figuring puzzle pieces out. It's, you know, you're good in a crisis. You're, you know what I mean? Like you.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right in, you know, and
you're
it's
not
just
memorizing
funny.
A bunch of stuff and regurgitating
huge long reports and everything else. It's not. It's quick and it keeps your mind engaged. Like
it sounds to me like what you're saying is we need to really empower HR professionals, leaders to. It's all about with them, right? What's in it for them? We need to convince them that they need these neurodivergent brains for their organizations because we are going to make them so much better.
100%. I'm actually teaching a roundtable for the CPHR, our human resource designation, next month on supporting neurodiversity in the workplace and what it is. And I think it was on one of your podcasts where someone explained ADHD as the sriracha. Do you remember this?
It's like your special sauce.
ADHD is kind of like the sriracha. Like if you had a whole plate full of sriracha, it's just going to be too much.
Yeah.
But if you're missing the sriracha, it's like if there's like something missing, like you need to have a little bit of everything for it to be complete. And, you know, even with AI coming in, we need to have the creative thinkers. AI is linear.
Right.
And so you need to have the people who are able to see the full picture and able to pull things together. Like I need my linear thinkers to get the math and, you know, all the little specific pieces that need to be done. But like, I'm the one who can like figure these things out quickly and Tetris the pieces together. Cause I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I was listening to a TED talk with Temple Grandin and it was really funny because she started talking about how she was a visual thinker and like how she sees in pictures and not everyone does. And I was like, what are you talking about? Not everyone. Because that's exactly how I see. And I was talking to my husband. I was like, how do you think? Like, what do you see? And it never occurred to me that everyone didn't think the way that I, you know what I mean? Like you need to have these diverse individuals to be able to have these awesome products.
So how do you do that though? How do you get them to understand again, why it's so important to have people like us in their organizations?
It is about the education piece, about going in and saying, you know, like, yeah, I can tell you about the traits of ADHD, but it's just going to be brief because everybody is so completely different. You know, people say, and everyone gets so upset because they're like, you know, I'm a little bit ADHD and you have to, you know, for us who have ADHD and realize, you know, how difficult it can be, that's not a thing. But at the same time, yeah, you could be forgetful. Yeah, you could be disorganized. Yeah, you could be, you know, have a hard time in social. Like, so you do get it. We all have these challenges that we're working around. So if we can say, like, I may be late, but at the same time, I'm the person who's going to work through lunch because I'm so hyper focused. So to be able to take the good and the bad, or, you know, why not just have like, and this is the way most. Well, what they're trying to do in the UK and Australia is to have organizational wide accommodations because everyone can benefit from it.
Yeah.
So like, why not just everyone have the way I was lucky enough to have in the last, you know, 15 years and it worked out great, flexible work schedules. Like I know for myself that if anything that needs a lot of mental capacity, I have to do early in the morning. And so from like 7 till like noon, I can work nonstop on the computer and I'm like, I'm on fire. I can process and I can do so much. By that point, I'm fried. This is when I go for a run with my dogs, take an hour and a half, and then all of a sudden I'm fresh again. And it feels amazing. I feel like I've had a really great day. But if it's constrained and, you know, you can't do that, but why? You know, it's just learning about the individual, being able to be open around accommodations and, you know, consistently checking in with people to make sure that, you know, the accommodations are working for them, and having people at the top being open about themselves so that everyone else feels like, you know, that they're understood, like,
because they're supported, right? And people care. I mean, ultimately, isn't that what it's about? That you are working in an environment where you actually feel like it's not just about your work product, although that's going to be good. It's also that people give a damn about you.
Well, exactly. And again, I was working in an environment where I was very open to speak about our differences. And so when I was working with my staff, I would say, okay, listen, you know, I have a horrible memory. If you tell me something, it's not going to happen. So you need to, if you ask me something, you need to email me first, mm-hmm. or email me again. And if you, and you know, if I forget, it's 100% you follow up. It's okay. And when I was creating different systems, I included everybody and I was like, okay, this is what I was thinking is going to work. So I've created this onboarding system. I've just hired you on, and I would check in with them like, okay, so what worked with it? What didn't? What do you wish you knew? And so by acknowledging that, you know, I have my challenges, I'm trying to figure things out, I understand when you have challenges, you can come to me, and it ended up being an open door. You know what I mean? People come to me all the time like, oh, I have this great idea, because I was in constant contact with everyone and I was checking in with everyone to be like, what's working for you? What's not? What do you want to learn? Because that's how I learn. And it just became a really cohesive, nice, awesome team that really worked together. And I got so many great ideas that I would never have come up with myself, because it was the people who were in the front line who were working being like, this is what's coming up. I wouldn't know because I'm not doing that anymore. You know, it was wonderful. I always thought that, you know, when you are in a position working in something like HR, that when you go for an interview and they do references, that you should also have references for the people that you supported. Like, yeah. You know, your superior can tell you if you were on time and if you handed everything in and you know, your work ethic. But the people who you supported and who your job actually affected, they are the people who can say if you did your job effectively or not.
Yeah. I think the problem is we're still locked into this authoritarian work model, right? Where bosses feel like if I can't see them, if I can't control the situation, they're not going to do anything. Yet I think there've been enough studies to show that, look, if you showed people that you care about how they work, you know, they feel positive emotion, they're going to generate so much more work product than those people that you're managing by literally, you know, like it's a prison.
Yeah, well, exactly. And like we didn't, you know, over the years, and I worked hybrid and I really liked the hybrid model where I, you know, I went in and I had my people days where I mm-hmm. actually put on me and, you know,
yeah,
clothes with buttons. And, you know, I had my time and, you know, we had that energy and connection and things got done. And then I had my time at home because even though I can't stop moving and talking, I cannot focus. If people are moving and talking around me.
Yeah.
Like my kids,
yeah.
If I'm working, I'm like, no moving and talking. No moving and talking.
Oh, moving and talking. You're frozen.
Yeah. And it was never like, you know, it was honored that I would put in the time that I said I was going to do. It's when you feel like you're not valued. I don't know how many times I'd be working on something so hard and then something would happen. I would talk and, you know, someone would kind of put down something or something wouldn't go great, or I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't value something that I was doing. And I was like, well, you know, time for a coffee break, because yeah. It's, you have to feel appreciated that you're part of something bigger.
Especially us, right? Because we are so mission driven
and like imposter syndrome. Like everybody is just like, one day someone's going to come in here and know that I have no idea what I'm doing and be like, get out of here. Like the other thing that drives me crazy is like, I always wonder, when I'm doing something, if it's taking me so much longer than a neurotypical, because I have time blindness mm-hmm. and I think that something's going to take a certain amount of time. So I want to have like someone who's neurotypical beside me working at the same time. So I know if what I'm doing is at the same level. Like I have no idea. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm sure you have many experiences that you can recall if you try
where you got into hyperfocus and the work product just flew out, right? And it was so good.
Yes. Well, I'm in hyperfocus quite often. I like to research. That's for
totally.
Sure.
This is a fascinating conversation. So I am curious, what are the ADHD traits that you feel are responsible for your success?
Well, definitely being a people person and talking and, you know, I really want to make sure that, you know, everybody is feeling good and feeling successful in what they do. And like, because of my mouth and talking and being flaky and everything else I've been able to have all these crazy wild jobs working on a cruise ship for, you know, 4 years and traveling across South America just because someone said, you know, you want to go? And I was like, all right. Didn't even think twice. 2 months going across South America was amazing.
Okay. But being a people person isn't necessarily an ADHD trait. For some of us, it is, right? So what about being a people person do you think is responsible for your success? Like, what is it about that? I'm just wondering, like, is it your enthusiasm? Is it your energy? Is it your empathy? Like, stuff like that.
Sure. Yes. So what it is I feel like being a people person, being able to just go in and talk to anyone. And I love learning about everybody else. And through that connection, you end up going to different places. The other thing that I think is like one of the most important things is to be able to give yourself grace. There's so many times when I've, you know, beat myself up over, you know, not getting everything done on my to-do list or not feeling like I have done enough. And I remember talking to a counselor once and I was like, I'm so upset. I can never seem to be successful at getting everything done on my list. And she said, Lisa, who made the list? And I was like, oh, right.
And how long was the list, right?
Exactly. And then she was like, you should have like a to-do list, you know, at the end of the day, anything you were successful at. I shaved my arms. I fed my kids and kept them alive. Like, you were successful, you know, cheers and hurrah. Yeah. So just to, when there are days, and everyone has the days when you are on fire and you do, you know, go through a million things. And then the next 2 days you do nothing. You're like, oh, I feel so terrible. I got nothing done. But if you average out those days, you have been very, very successful. And even the days where you think you haven't got so much done, you've done a lot of things, but just not the things that you were thinking you were going to get done. So just to be like, it's okay. It's in our fast paced world where we think that we always have to do more and do whatever. It's okay to be who you are and have the good days and have the bad days. I also think it's important to find your people. People who get you, who understand you. And we traditionally as people, we kind of like, you know, are attracted to people who are similar to us. You know, I have my running friends and I have my whatever else, but it's also funny when I will look back, like many of my friends are neurodiverse. And I think it's because, you know, we could have plans. And then that day I'm just like, you know what? I'm not peopling today. I'm like, I'm really going to have to cancel for a brain check. And they don't get upset. They're like, you do you, sister. It's like, you know, I'm a mom. I'm a whatever. I'm cooked today. We'll do it on another day. Or just to be there instantaneously if you just want to like jet out and do whatever. So people who get you. I just got back from walking across Spain. I did the Camino. And
you're like the fourth person who's told me that in the last week.
Well, it wasn't even on my radar. It was my friend from college. It was her 50th birthday. And she said, you want to go? And I was like, well, yeah, I do. And on our last 2 days, and everyone you meet was just like, it was so timely. It was an amazing trek. And on the last 2 days in Madrid, I rented us what I thought was an apartment. But it wasn't. It was a room with another couple living in Madrid. And I was like, oh my God, Lisa, what have you done? But again, best mistake ever. It was this couple. And this guy, Bill, he used to sing in, background in Disney movies, and he was a performer, and he was, a YouTube sensation now, singing a pop song as Be Daddy. And then Ricardo. And he's like one of the top flamenco dancers in Spain. And so just like, you two are amazing. Let's hang out. And like, we went to the most amazing flamenco shows, and we saw Madrid like nobody else. But, Bill and I started talking, and if, you know, he's like,
ADHD came up and he has ADHD. And I was saying, like, and we were both talking about how our partners don't. They're both are very neurotypical. And I said, you know, I was in a very, very not great marriage. And my ex-husband was always putting me down for who I was and trying to change who I was. And my partner now, whenever I do something very Lisa or very goofy, he's always looks at me and he's like, that's my girl. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, it just touches. But I'm like, I've always worry about being too much. Mm-hmm. And Bill said, Lisa, the best people are the people who are too much. And I was just like, oh, like it's finding your, like I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
It's finding people who get you. And, you know, and I think as you get older, as you have all these different experiences, you know, you really feel for everyone else because you've been there. You've been affected in different ways.
So, Lisa, what is your number one workaround?
Well, I have a few. The first one is Bubble Up, the Bubble Up app. And I believe I heard about it on your show. And everyone says I need to be a Bubble Up rep because I talk about it all the time. It's like saved my life, where I used to have all this anxiety and all these different tabs open because of information I didn't want to lose. And I end up putting it in the Bubble Up folder, and it's reduced my anxiety. And
tell us how Bubble Up works.
So Bubble Up is a project management, but it's also information storing. So it's an app that you can go in and you create different folders. So I have a folder for, you know, human resources and all the different areas of human resources. So when I find an article or a note or a picture or something else, I can put it in that folder. And so when I need to write a policy or I need to do something, all of the information is there. But I also use it for, you know, writing, you know, remembering what I want to get people for Christmas or, you know, planning a trip. All the information is there and you can share different folders with different people. And it's visual and beautiful. I just love it. But the main thing that it helps with is procrastination. There's a organizational psychologist named Adam Grant, and he is absolutely amazing. Everything that he says is great. And he was talking about how people who procrastinate, it is actually a good thing, because if you read the project, and even if you procrastinate, you're constantly thinking about it. So how I use Bubble Up is I would, you know, create a note. And every time I thought about something about this project that I was having a hard time starting, I would add it to this folder for this one particular project, or if I found an article or if I found whatever. So then when it came down to the very last minute of, you know, of course, when I was waiting to do my project, I had tons of information. It was already, you know, halfway through, three quarters of the way done with it, me actually even thinking about it. So it was like tricking myself into getting started, but also having a much better end product because I had been thinking about it the whole time. And, you know, with all the thoughts that came into my head, instead of being lost, they all were all stored in one spot.
I love that.
The other thing, and I think the most important one was actually you, Tracy. And you know, as I've listened to many, many of your podcasts, it made me feel like all these other women, like I was okay. And when I was diagnosed and it was hard to kind of figure out who I was. And I was reading all these different things and it was very negative and I was having such a hard time. And now I realize that whenever I'm having those days where I'm feeling super down, super I'm broken, I can't do anything. What am I thinking? I grab my running shoes. I grab my two dogs and I head for the mountain and I listen to your podcast and I listen to you and I listen to all the women on the podcast and having people who I can relate to who are actually we made it to the other side. We made it okay. We were successful. And, you know, even because we have these different things that are difficult, there's all these amazing things as well. And I think I've saved myself millions on counseling because by the time I get down to the bottom of the mountain again, I'm floating. I am like, I can walk on water and everything in the world is okay again. And also just the amazing women that you've had on the show, like I've connected with, you know, a number of them. Katie Hayes, because I'm also an artist and doing printmaking. So she has, I think it's South House Pattern Design or something. So she was helping me out with Lino. And then Kaylin, who was the
pharmacist.
She was helping. I was messaging with her and she was helping me out with my daughter. And it was just like, and then, you know, it's just like
finding it's a community.
It's a community. Yeah. And everyone has been so gracious and wonderful because we all want to help each other. And it's just like,
a warm hug. I don't know. It just, it's, you have made me okay with me and I appreciate it. And I know we all do. It's just like, yeah, I don't know what I would have done or where I'd be right now in my own okayness without this podcast.
Well, thank you. And it's now come full circle because there are going to be women who are going to listen to you and feel the same way about you that you felt about all these other women that were on the podcast. So thanks for taking the time to show up.
Thank you. And I would love to help anyone out because honestly, it's been something. It's been something, Tracy. It's been great. Thank you.
Wonderful. What a wonderful way to close. So what I would love to know, Lisa, is what you're working on. You know, is there anything you want to tell us about? Where can people find you if they want to know more about you? All this stuff.
So I've just recently, because this has been my hyper passion, hyper focus and passion for the last number of years, I have like delved in deep on researching everything about ADHD and strategies, not only for myself, but for my kids. And then realizing how much needs to happen within organizations and finding all these different organizations that are amazing, that are working on accommodations and supporting diversity. So right now I'm just finishing. I have one more course and I'm taking diversity, equity, inclusion at a local university here, finishing up that program. And I started my own business. And it's called Mind Mosaic Inclusive HR. And it's like weeks old so that, for my HR practice, but to, focus on supporting neurodiversity. But, and again, the more that we learn, it's just supporting diversity, supporting anyone who, so everyone feels supported in the workplace and creating team culture and, systems that, you know, would be effective for everyone, but also helping to educate around what it feels like to have neurodiversity in the workplace and the reason why that these accommodations would be so fantastic for them and for everyone else. It's just more about connecting people to understand. And again, like, I'm bringing up Dr. Megan up again. She, but the cross culture, you know, if, you know, you're talking to someone who, two people with autism and they don't have good eye contact, is it really a deficit? It's only when it's cross culture, when, you know, you're someone, that's when it feels like it's a deficit because, you know, you're not looking someone in the eye. Just to really understand each other and figure out the ways to work together and creating systems that are great for everyone. I really focus on onboarding, training, and team culture. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay. So give us the URL.
So it's www.mymosaic.ca.
Okay. And you're in Canada, right?
I'm in Canada, yes.
Sounds good. Lisa, thank you so. And this is going to be in our show notes, by the way. So if you missed it, it's mindmosaic.ca, but it will also be in the show notes. Thank you so much for spending time with us here today. It was a pleasure to meet you.
It was a pleasure to meet you as well. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So that's what I have for you for this week. If you like this episode with Lisa, please let us know by leaving a review. Our goal is to help to what is our goal? Our goal is to change the conversation around ADHD, helping as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so that they too may discover their amazing strengths. As always, you're listening to ADHD for Smartass Women. Come join me over at ADHDforSmartWomen.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you here next week. You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Join us at ADHDforSmartWomen.com, where you can find more information on my new book, ADHD for Smartass Women, and my patented Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system to help you get unstuck and fall in love with your brilliant brain. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. And don't forget to sign up for our free live virtual training, 3 days to fall in love with your ADHD brain, starting on April 15th at spyhappy.me/3days. I'm telling you, it's life-changing.